People of the world, it's the Brothers Talk with your hosts, Rod, Scott, and Norm, inviting you to join us each Friday wherever you listen to your favorite podcast or on our website to hear our take as three black, unfiltered African-American men with no strings attached, giving voice to the most feared, most misunderstood, and most rarely heard from segment of the population on topics of interest to us for education, enlightenment, and entertainment. You can follow us on Facebook. You can reach us with your comments, questions, suggestions at The Brothers Talk on Twitter, The Brothers Talk on Instagram, and you can email us, thebrotherstalk@gmail.com. And stay tuned for our long-awaited YouTube channel. And now on with this week's episode. Hey, Brothers Talk family, welcome in wherever you are around the world, listening in and holding your critical thinking conversations to promote activism and uplift our people. We appreciate you. And to all first-time listeners, we're always glad you tuned in, and we hope you're here to help with the work of encouraging and educating as we endorse and inspire new and existing Black businesses and individuals to empower and enrich the Black community. We're still signaling the coronavirus awareness alert because the virus is still here with the latest subvariant, still very much infectious and deadly. The government and the medical experts are forecasting another surge this fall and winter, so we still consider it our job to keep mentioning it because it's still a matter of life and death. Be careful when you're out and about, even if you're the only one thinking about the safety of you and your loved ones. The health professionals are still advising that you get your vaccinations or the newest boosters, and remember that masks in crowded situations help prevent the spread of all respiratory infections, including the flu and RSV2. And finally, don't forget that most disinfectants will kill all the viruses, and that's just good sense, period. If you're traveling this summer for weddings, graduations, reunions, and/or vacations, remember you definitely don't want to bring anything deadly back with you when you return home, especially to your medically fragile family and friends. Come on, people, we can and we must do better. And now to my brothers in the struggle for critical thinking, Scott and Norm.
Thanks, Rod. And as usual, family, thank you for your continued support. And I'm going to stay on that theme about the coronavirus. I was traveling this weekend, and on my flight, I made sure I counted how many people were wearing masks. Other than me, there were two other people on the flight, a full flight, wearing a mask. Everywhere that I went this weekend, I might have been one or two or three people wearing masks. And what bothered me more than anything, there were so many elderly people that I didn't see with masks on, people who are much older than me, and people are just out here maskless as if the virus is completely gone. They're not paying attention. They're oblivious to what's happening. And I see it's going to be a surge. I was hoping it's going to be a surge because people have let their guards down. And they're just going on as if, oh, the virus isn't here no more. They don't even talk about it no more. So all I can say is I wear my mask everywhere I go. Every now and then I may forget and say, oh, forgot my mask. So family, wear your mask. Get vaccinated if you're not vaccinated, because this fall, we're going to have some problems.
Thanks, Scott. I just want to remind all of our listeners that Dr. Cornel West is running for president this year. Now, I feel we should give him our support, and that means financially as well, because we need to show the Democrats that, you know, we should not be taken advantage of anymore and just deliver our votes for nothing. And literally, if we can get 5% of the vote during a general election, you know, we can actually start our own political party and hopefully, you know, have our own list of demands and needs and requirements for any candidate and garner some respect from independents and Republicans and Democrats alike. So I just wanted to put that out there as a reminder.
This week, we're returning to some familiar territory, but because there is actual data now to back up the points that we've been making, which are pretty obvious across all the ethnicities, but the Centers for Disease Control, National Institute of Health, released the study that spoke to the toxic effects of racism on Black health. And some of the findings, which were not only surprising, but in some ways shocking, spoke to the fact that they were originally investigating the fact of why so many normally healthy African-Americans, Black people who did not have underlying conditions, who were in their 40s and 50s and sometimes in their 30s, were dying from COVID. And what they came away with was physiological proof that because of the stresses associated with racism, their immune systems, as well as their biological structure, had been compromised. And so they're showing it in everything from the birth rate of African-American women and the mortality rate of Black babies and Black mothers to the fact that when they compare to other groups, they're seeing that it is endemic. In other words, that the cause and effect means that even when Africans come here, they are subject to the same kinds of stresses that cause them to have comparable mortality rates and low birth rates, even though that wasn't the case in their native countries in Africa. And so what we're looking at is information that is proving the point that the stresses that happen to African-American women, even during the birth process, meaning that a part of why they are dying during the birthing process is not limited to them, but also the fact that these babies are being born under stress, so that the CDC is saying that this accounts for some of the aggressive behavior, because we see oftentimes a lot of people complaining about young Black men and women and how aggressive they are. And here you have a study that is saying that there is biological proof that they are not products of their environment as much as they are products of the racism that has caused a basic kind of mutation in their birth. And so this is just astounding information, and we're glad that the CDC and the NIH is releasing that study.
You know, Rod, one of the things, like you said, what it does is it validates what we've been saying and what a lot of Black people have been saying or thinking, that this structured institutionalized racism is having the impact that it's having on, most of the time we're looking at that when we talk about institutionalized structured racism, we're looking at it more of like a socioeconomic or economic from that kind of view, point of view. But when you start looking at the whole picture, and we even talked about the environmental racism, where 9 out of 10 hazardous waste sites are in Black community, and in particular, low income Black communities. And they've done studies and they already know that some of those hazardous chemicals seep into the soil, you know, into the playgrounds where those kids play. And those people in those environments, that's why there's a lot of violence, the same kind of thing, the impact that that's having on them. But this is something that they know. They know that this is happening. So, but what they do is they accuse the parents of, well, they don't have a father in the home, or she's a bad parent. But they're not letting people know that, hey, we know what's happening. You know, this just seems like to me that it is something that is planned. It's been planned out. We know what the impact is going to be, and we're not going to do anything about it. And so that's what we're dealing with now. And it's just good to see that there's actual data to back up the fact that this institutionalized systematic racism, the way it is impacting Black people's health in a negative way.
And Rod, I want to go back to something you said regarding the birth issues that we're having, African-American women are having. That goes across socioeconomic lines as well. Because I want to get Serena Williams in case here. She had the same issues during the birth of her child as many Black women have, not getting the medical attention required during her pregnancy. Now, she is very wealthy. If it's happening to someone like her who can afford the best of the best, just imagine what's going on with women who are literally earning $30,000, $40,000 a year and are struggling for basic health care. I just wanted to bring that point up, but I also wanted to point to Flint and Jackson, Mississippi, which are two pretty much African-American cities that are struggling to get basic drinking water. And until the federal government came in and literally put money in place to actually address those issues, nothing was being done. But once the money was allocated for those projects in those cities, whites then came in, the white power structure then came in and attempted to circumvent that and take that money for themselves. And that's what's going on right now.
And you cannot miss the fact that when you talk about the healthcare system, how much racism plays a part in that as well, because even though we are speaking to the health impact, the negative health impact of racism, then the next step says that, well, you know, what happens when they then go to get treatment? And the same study had aspects that were pointing to other studies showing the amount of racism that still exists in our healthcare system, showing what you mentioned, Norm, that in essence, it didn't matter what the socioeconomic status of a Black person was, that they were going to receive racist, substandard healthcare. And they pointed to blind studies they did with doctors, and they looked at white doctors versus non-white doctors, and they showed that when they gave them studies to ask questions about certain situations that were presented to them, and they would give them a picture of a Black person versus a white person, that the treatment was markedly different in a positive sense for the white patient, even though the symptoms were described were exactly the same as what they were prescribing for the Black patient. In other words, they were much more likely to prescribe life-saving cures for the white participants as they saw them versus the Black participants. So your situation is compounded by the fact that you come into a situation with these stresses of racism that are already making you more vulnerable to most diseases, and in this case, particularly COVID. But then when you get into the healthcare system, you're finding that your level of care is also being substandard. So tell me that's not a catch-22.
I want to go back to when you talked about the birth outcome. There's a guy, his name is Thomas Avise. I don't know what he still worked for Hopkins or not. He was some type of researcher at Hopkins. He did this study some years ago where they looked at birth outcomes for Black women. And they found out that it didn't matter your, like you said, your educational status, educational level, or your socioeconomic status. There were doctors, female doctors, they were having the same birth outcome as Black women who didn't go to school. And the conclusion was that it was because of racism and the stress of racism. They've been knowing that for years, but they were talking about, they didn't just say mortality rate, they just talked about the birth outcomes. But the fact that a study was done by Hopkins, somebody at Hopkins, to show that, you know, hey, it doesn't matter what your socioeconomic status is. If you're a Black woman in this country, there's a chance that your birth outcome may or may not be, you know, what you want it to be. And then they're also talking about how, not in that particular study, but the kind of service that Black women get when they go to the doctor, that they don't respond the same way to pregnant Black women. There's a video out there where this Black female doctor is begging and pleading with Black women and telling them, when you get pregnant, you need to have a plan. You need to have somebody that you can go to, that you can call if you feel like, hey, I'm in an emergency situation. You got to have a partner, anybody. You can call at the drop of, and they can come. So you need somebody to advocate for you, because these people are not listening to them. They think that for some reason, Black women don't have the same kind. They have a higher pain threshold than other women or white females. And so you have something that's going on. It's real. It's in the healthcare system. And it's not just the fact that the racism is causing the unwanted birth outcome, but it's also a part of the kind of services that they are getting. That's also tied into this whole thing when you're talking about the racism and the impact it's having on birth outcome for Black women.
Now, my question is, what is the African-American medical establishment doing to address these issues? Because we do have some doctors and nurses and scientists out here that are really well aware of this problem. What are they doing to address this?
Well, as you said, the AMA versus the NMA. And so the NMA is the Black Doctors Association. You know, there's only so much they can really do. They are trying to bring it to attention because there's a lot of Black doctors who now have panels and they recommend to people with color that they should be looking for doctors of color, because just what we said earlier, that it's a proven fact that when you're dealing with non-white doctors, that you don't see the bias and the racism in the system. So it's that kind of thing. But we recognize also that how few on per capita Black doctors there really are. So, I mean, so there's only so much they can do. But that's why we have to raise the issue and the flag as we talk about it in this format. And hopefully others will pick up the conversation and move it forward as well. Because at the end of the day, what we're really trying to ascertain is, why do we live in a country where these are the kinds of statistics that are now readily available, and yet you have such pushback because you still have all the old stereotypes of saying that the results of the before these studies came out, the old saws and stereotypes said that, well, it was a result of poor Black eating habits and poor life choices and so forth. But this study clearly shows that that is not the case, because when they looked at it apples to apples, meaning that they looked at Blacks and whites of the same socioeconomic, same educational level, same income level, that the stats showed this great gap. And so that's why we have to be on the front lines of making sure that we as a people ask the right kind of questions and do not allow anybody else to tell us a narrative that doesn't stand up, because we've seen it. You know, Scott, you mentioned that one video, and there was, of course, the other situation of the Black doctor in Illinois who could not get the treatment that she needed for COVID, and she documented that on Facebook. And again, this is a Black doctor, and so she went home and literally died because they refused to treat her the way that they should. So we know that we are in a situation where it's vitally important for us all to start to take a more active role in our health outcome. So please make sure that that's what you do and discuss this. And as Scott said, you got to have a plan. You cannot go into these situations by yourself. And if you have someone going in with you, make sure that they are skeptical of this healthcare system, because otherwise it's just going to be the blind leading the blind, and we certainly don't need that. In our Black Business Spotlight, meet Kiera Henderson, an African-American entrepreneur from Dallas, Texas, also known as the Trucking Guru. She's achieved remarkable success in the transportation industry over the past 15 years, despite facing numerous challenges as a single mother without a high school diploma or GED. And she's defied gender stereotypes and established a very successful trucking business. To date, her contract deals have surpassed the value of $100 million. Kiera's impact extends beyond her own business. She's committed to sharing her knowledge and experiences to transform the lives of other startups in the industry and to inspire new generations to enter the industry as well. And this from a woman who does not even have a driver's license. But through her Trucking Millionaires Tour, she empowers entrepreneurs to navigate the trucking business, become independent contractors, dispatchers, run a brokerage firm, and secure contracts as an owner-operator. To learn more about the Trucking Guru, go to its official website, thetruckingguru.com. That's a wrap for this show. And remember, you can share your thoughts with us and follow and communicate with us by sending your comments, as well as your questions and show ideas to The Brothers Talk on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or email us, thebrotherstalk@gmail.com. As always, God willing, we'll continue to keep our focus on the issues that impact our community on the path to a better future. And until our next episode, know that we sincerely appreciate your time and interest, and rest assured that we'll never take it or you for granted. And finally, let's all do better today, because that's all we really have.